we began speaking about Rabbi Akiva, a personality who obviously you could spend a whole year discussing full time. So really just scratching the surface. The goal of this mini series is to try to give one perspective and survey a number of stories, a number of areas of trademark elements of Rabbi Akiva's personality. And the goal was trying to show one common theme that really unites all of them. A personality who his contributions to Klal Yisrael were literally unfathomable. I mean, Adayom Hazeh, we still don't appreciate what Rabbi Akiva accomplished. But by kind of, you know, slicing off one piece, really giving us an ability, hopefully, to have at least a certain angle, a certain handle to think about what made him unique from a certain perspective and give us something that we could aspire to, of course, on our own. And what we pointed to was this consistent ability that Rabbi Akiva has to see, not just to see both sides of an issue, but like all the time, Rabbi Akiva seems to be someone of particular breadth, particular creativity, consistently able to access the other angle, being able to see two sides at the same time, even the side that other people can't, and even two sides which from a certain perspective may seem contradictory. So for example, while Rabbi Akiva is the ultimate personality of martyrdom, dying al Kiddush Hashem, and his story where he says, I waited my whole life to see would I ever have the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of the Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol nafshecha, loving God with your entire soul, which he taught meant giving one's life up, even if they take your life, being willing to sacrifice one's life for God. At the same time, in the Tosefta, Rabbi Akiva was the one who produced the source that in general, the Torah desires life. Chai bahem, you shall live by them and not die by them, that in general, the Torah wants us to prioritize life over the observance of a certain mitzvah. Rabbi Akiva being the one who said, V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha ze klal gadol batorah, the ultimate rule is the complete dedication to your fellow, love your fellow as yourself. And yet, also in the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva was the one who said that your life takes priority over the life of your fellow. V'chayachicha imach, chayacha kodmin, two people in the desert, one needs to take priority, one needs to prioritize himself over their fellow. Two different perspectives, Rabbi Akiva able to see, to emphasize both of them. The world of Israel, the world of the nations, well, Rabbi Akiva's mission in Perkei Avos, and a little bit later tonight we'll revisit Perkei Avos. Rabbi Akiva had the mission of Perkei Avos where he had the ultimate statement of universal human value. Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem, beloved is man, for he was created in the image of God. And then one second later, Rabbi Akiva is also able to say, Chaviv in Yisrael, Shenikru Banim L'Makom. And Israel has a particular love because they are called sons, they are called children to Hashem. Loving both, emphasizing both, two values that he holds in balance, one side and the other, again and again and again. So the goal for tonight is to see a few more examples of this. And particularly what I'm excited about tonight is we're going to look at how this attitude manifested itself in the area where Rabbi Akiva ultimately made his greatest contribution, where his greatest passion lay. And that, of course, is in the realm of learning Torah. So to look at Rabbi Akiva's style of Talmud Torah, but first, we're just going to look at a couple of other examples to maybe your quicker hitters. I'm gonna share the source sheet in the chat in case anyone wants it for later, because there's no way we're gonna get to all the sources tonight. So this is where you can have it in case you want, and then we'll load it up on the screen share. We'll go through some of these inside. Second, open up, great, and let's load this guy. Okay, so maybe one certainly a classic example of Rabbi Akiva's ability to balance in a department where others, even the greatest of the great, fall short. It's a story which no one understands, so we're not going to even try. But at least to a small degree, The story in the Gemara in Chagiga about the four Chachamim who entered Pardes. Who entered whether Gan Eden or the supernatural realm, whatever it was exactly. But the Gemara tells a story. Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, originally Elisha ben Avuya and Rabbi Akiva, who enter Pardes. And the short version of the story is that they're entering the supernatural realm. I think Rashi says by virtue of reciting Hashem's the Shem HaMeforash, the ultimate divine name. And when they get there, so the other three come to a destructive end because they advance too far. The quest to cleave to the divine was too strong, and it either led, in Ben Azai's case, to his death. Rashi quotes the pasuk that Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Ki lo yirani adam v'chai." A person cannot see me and live. So Ben Azai, who in his attempt to escape the material world and cleave to the supernatural divine world, he succeeds. That means that he goes too far. He can't live in this world and live in this world. He goes to the world above. He must leave the world below. He dies. Ben Zoma as well tries too hard, goes too far, loses his sanity, loses his humanity. Elisha ben Avuya tries too hard to understand. He bumps up against some of the fundamental mysteries of Hashem. Ultimately, the human intellect cannot understand man, cannot understand God. We saw last week, Rabbi Akiva had no problem in his Mishnah Berakhei Avos saying that on the one hand, Hashem sees everything. On the other hand, we maintain freedom of choice, what the Rambam and the Ravid called the ultimate question. Rabbi Akiva didn't seem to have any problem balancing those two. Elisha ben Avuya can't. He tries to understand. He tries. He can't recognize his limits. He can't go beyond them. It breaks his faith. Rabbi Akiva says the Gemara was the one who is unique. Rabbi Akiva enters in peace, and Rabbi Akiva leaves in peace. He can go. He can try to go as far as he can while also maintaining his humanity. He is uniquely able to straddle both realms. He can live in Olam Hazah. He can go to Olam Haba, and he can come back. And no one else can pull that off. Even the greatest of the great, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, they can't do it. We see another example, Rabbi Akiva putting 2 feet in this case, literally, having 2 feet in two worlds. Okay. Another short example, that's an interesting one, is Rabbi Akiva's approach to tefillah. What should tefillah look like? Should davening be long or should davening be short? Should davening be intense or should davening be calm? So the Mishnah quotes an interesting debate between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, two of Rabbi Akiva's teachers. How people should daven Shmon Esrei. Anyone who's daven Shmon Esrei or has been to shul when people are daven Shmon Esrei immediately realizes that the feeling is that most of the room on any given day is not having the ultimate all-time kavana. You may wonder, if we this is a little bit shorter, maybe we could focus for a little bit. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik has a classic essay where he argues for the Rambam that even though you're supposed to have kavana for all Shmoneh Esrei, there's a special requirement of kavana for at least the first bracha of Shmoneh Esrei. And so at least could people get out a little bit. So Reb Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua debated this exact point. Reb Gamliel said, the hardliner, Reb Gamliel was more of an inflexible stickler. He said, everyone's got to daven all 18 brachos. Says Rabbi Yeshua. Yeshua is generally more flexible, more understanding of human frailty. And most people are not going to pull off Shon Esrei every day, 3 times a day with perfect kavana. Let's be honest, definitely applies to me. It applies to many others as well. So Rabbi Yeshua says, I have a solution for that. Shrug our shoulders. Rabbi Yeshua says, may ain Shon Esrei. Everyone should say the abbreviated version of Shmoneh Esrei. Now, some of this hasn't, this has kind of lost that popularity, especially now that we have the printed Siddur of it as a text of Shmoneh Esrei. But there's a shorter version called Havineinu, which basically cuts out the middle long chunk of most of the brachos of Shmoneh Esrei. Rabbi Yeshua says, choke up on the bat. I want people to have a shorter davening experience, because that'll be better maybe. Be more flexible. Don't go for the long Shmoneh Esrei. Just go for the short one. What does Rabbi Akiva do? Rabbi Akiva, classic, tries to split the difference. He recognizes the value of Rabbi Gamliel's ambition, that everyone's davening Shmoneh Esrei. We want the full thing. He recognizes the value, Rabbi Yeshua is saying, he recognizes human limits. He says, Each person has to make their own call. If someone feels they know the davening well, they can do it. Say the full thing. And if not, do the shorter one. Recognizing both options, recognizing the value of both, and ultimately, interestingly, leaving it to the individual to decide what they think is the most appropriate for them. Okay, skip down a little bit. Well, that's already. Let's get to the one that I'm particularly excited about. Talmud Torah, creativity and tradition. This is really Rabbi Akiva's ultimate trademark land, all-time contribution to Jewish thought. So just a minute of background. I'm not sure what language this chart is in that I dug up over here. But I was trying to find a chart to just put Rabbi Akiva with his students and his teachers in context, because we'll see it's going to be very helpful. We're looking at some of the sources in a minute. So I'm pretty sure this looks, I don't know what this is, anyone knows, but it's French maybe, I'm not sure. But it's not English, but it doesn't really matter because we can recognize the names well enough, hopefully, right? You have Rabbi Akiva here in the middle. You see, even in terms of the Tanaim, Rabbi Akiva really was like the central hub among the Tanaim. It's mapped out. The earlier generations, Rabbi Akiva in the middle. Look at all the students Rabbi Akiva has that come out from him. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, ultimately going down to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So Rabbi Akiva is the primary teacher, the primary transmitter of the Masorah. Where did he inherit the Masorah from? So he has two main Rebbeim. We're going to talk about in a minute. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis, who are two of the five students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And they are clearly the two greatest of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Talmidim. So Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, who were young scholars at the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, so they lived through that whole disastrous episode. They survived that, transmitting to the next generation. Rabbi Akiva is their main Talmud. Did I put this on the, I'll look at it in a second. In fact, the classic story about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I'm just going to stop here for a second. The story of Elizabeth, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who needs to leave the siege of Yerushalayim, but he can't do it because the zealots are running the city. And if he tries to flee to the Roman camp, so he'll be killed. Even Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So the Gemara tells a story that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai faked his death, and then his coffin was taken out because you can't bury anybody in the city of Yerushalayim. So two of his students took him out and took out his coffin, and that's how they transported Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to the Roman lines. So the Gemara actually says, who were Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's two students who took him out to the Roman lines? So it was his greatest talmidim. It was Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. As students, they were the ones who smuggled their Rebbe out of the besieged city of Yerushalayim. And then they become the two leading teachers of Rabbi Akiva. Now, what's amazing about Rabbi Akiva being a student of both of them is that they had very different personalities and very different strengths. As you'll see, Rabbi Akiva manages to synergize and absorb the strengths and really the personalities of both. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the teacher of the five, of the both of them, his mission, Berakhei Avos, where he describes the unique talent of each of his greatest Talmidim. And right then and there, he tells us very clearly the greatest, the strength of Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said about Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis, Bur Sud She'eno Ma'abe Tipa. He is a plastered pit which does not lose a drop. Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis' trademark strength was his ability to absorb all the Torah Shebaal Peh that he was taught. He remembered all of it. He learned all of it. He absorbed all of it, and he held on to all of it. That was his MO, remembering and absorbing the Masorah. And there's one story the Gemara tells which illustrates that beautifully. It's a very sad story, but it's at the end of Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis' life. He had been put under the cherem because he refused to go along with the view of everyone else, because he knew the halacha, so he's not going to subdue what he understands to be the true halacha to what everyone else said, even though disastrous consequences. And at the end, so he's filled with regret. He's not filled with regret for his own life. Excuse me, the Gemara describes he's filled with regret because of all the Torah that he has absorbed that he is not going to be able to transmit. Gemara says he took his two arms, put them in his heart. He says, woe for my arms, which are like two Sifrei Torah, which are now being rolled up. All the Torah that is going to be lost with the passing of Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. He says he's learned so much, and yet he hasn't been able to absorb everything. He hasn't been able to transmit everything. He says, Harbe Torah, the second line, Lamarti velo chasarti me'rabosai, afilu kekelev hamolakik min hayam. Here's his perspective on learning. He tried as hard as he could, the greatest of the great, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. And yet, what does he feel? He feels like he walked away from a life of toil in Torah like a dog trying to lick up the whole sea. He feels like he was only able to absorb a tiny piece of the Masorah. And then he continues, Harbe Torah li madati. My whole life, I was then dedicated to teaching what I had absorbed. V'lo chesruni talmidai ala kimchol bashfoferes. It feels like his students only received from him the equivalent of a little bit of paint that comes out of a paintbrush. You take a big tube of paint, you put in the brush, and the little piece that comes out of that, that's what he was able to transmit. Two metaphors, you might call it a mixed metaphor, but it's deliberate. What he tried to receive, he tried to receive the whole sea, and he only was able to get whatever a dog can drink. And then when we're talking about the Torah, he feels he himself has absorbed, it's just a jar of paint. But even relative to that, his students have only been able to get the amount that goes on a paintbrush. So this is someone whose experience and learning is dominated by trying to receive and transmit the tradition. And then, interestingly, the Elazar ben Hyrcanus continues. And he says, I'll give you a specific example. He says, there were vast fields of halacha I learned that nobody ever even scratched the surface of. So I learned 300 halachos about some kind of tzara'as. In general, Chazal use the term 300. That's their go-to term for an exaggeration. 300 always, like when I talk to this in Yuma, 300 means a lot. There were many, many halachos in obscure areas, and nobody ever asked me about them. Chutz me Akiva ben Yosef. The one student I had who had some effort, who at least to a degree, managed to register for Rabbi Eliezer, someone who was dedicated to absorbing the Masorah, was Akiva ben Yosef, of course, Rabbi Akiva. So that's Rabbi Eliezer's perspective on learning and teaching. And we see the one Talmud that he feels that he really has. On the other hand, Rabbi Yoshua, the other great Rabbi Yochum ben Zakkai, was one whose trademark piece was creativity. Rabbi Yoshua, a more moderate personality, less hard charging, but also more embracing of creativity. Gemara tells a story of two Tanaim, two students who went to visit Rabbi Yoshua. And Rabbi Yoshua immediately asked them, what new teaching happened in the Beis Medrash today? Machir Eshay Beis Medrash Hayom. They're very modest. They say, Rabbi, what could we possibly teach you? And then Rabbi Yoshua has the line, which becomes a classic line. It's Rabbi Yeshua's line. There's no such thing as people learning and not having their own ideas. That classic line comes from Rabbi Yeshua. He is the personality who teaches, if people are learning, there are going to be new ideas. Not just a question of a pit that is filled and absorbed, but to some degree, also generating new material. So those are the two Rebbeim, the two personalities that Rabbi Akiva is exposed to. Which of the two paths does he take? Does he take the path of focusing on absorbing, or does he take the path of focusing on creativity? As you might expect, not only does Rabbi Akiva try to pull off both, but he becomes in many ways a paradigmatic figure for both kinds of learning. It begins with Rabbi Akiva's earliest days. It's an amazing story in the Yerushalmi in Nazir. Akiva says, let me tell you about the beginning of my studies. Bacha is a tchilas tashmish ha'ilif nechachamim. The very, very beginning, when I was starting out. It was a Baal Tshuva. We know that he came to Torah later in life. He says, let me tell you how it first began. He says, I was on the road, and I saw a dead body. I saw a meis mitzvah. Greatest chesed story ever. Nitpalti bo ke arbas mil. I carried him for 4 mil until he came to a Jewish cemetery. He schlepped a dead body. You can imagine, I don't know what shape the body was in, how long it had been exposed for, the smell, the physical effort. Immense. Carries it four mil all the way to the cemetery. Then hopefully he takes a shower. Goes to the Beis Medrash. And he tells his Rebbeim. He goes to Rabbi Eliezer. He goes to Rabbi Yeshua. He tells them what happened. What's their response? He was expecting a response, you know, shkoch, it's amazing, it's impressive. Get your lunch. That's not what happens. Amruli, what they tell me, I'll call psio psio shayisi posea. Every single step that you took carrying that dead body, malin alacha ki'ilu shafacht damim. It's considered murder. Murder. Why? Because meis mitzvah, you don't carry anywhere. Meis mitzvah, they explained to him, the halacha is, meis mitzvah is kone makomo. He acquires whatever place he's in. You bury the meis mitzvah on the spot. There's nothing more important than that. Immediate burial. Kavod abrios, kavod ameis. Now that's a counterintuitive halacha. I would have thought that was amazing chesed Rabbi Akiva did. Pure common sense, the independent intellect would have thought that he was doing the right thing. Problem is, it's not enough to go with common sense. You have to learn the halachos. So Rabbi Akiva says right there, I made a kal v'chomer for myself. Says, you know, if I was trying and I got into trouble, so what? How much trouble will I in if I don't try to do the right thing? So he says, last line, this is a key piece from Yakiva. Remember, this is early days of the Talmud. He got burned. He made an independent decision. He got burned. At that moment, lozasti l'shamish hachamim. I did not move from serving the chachamim. I made the decision then and there. I had to absorb as much as I possibly could. And then it became a saying of his. Hu haya omer. This became one of Rabbi Akiva's sayings. Delo shimish chachimya k'tal achayev. Someone who does not serve the chachamim is liable to the death penalty. So this is an early transformational moment for Rabbi Akiva. He needs to serve. He needs to absorb. The lesson of Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus is stamped deep in his soul. And the Gemara has an amazing illustration of this. There's a classic story. Rabbi Akiva says, one time, I followed Rabbi Yeshua to the bathroom. And it says, I learned three things from how Rabbi Yeshua behaves in the bathroom. Which way to sit, which way, in fact, you're supposed to sit. Okay, details, how to wipe oneself. Incredible things. So Ben Azai, Rabbi Akiva's student, said to him, Ad Khan, hey, Azta Panacha Barabcha, were you this, you're that much of a machutzav? You literally stalked Rabbi Yeshua into the bathroom to see what direction he would sit in and what hand he'd use to wipe himself. It's crazy. This Rabbi Akiva was a man on a single-minded mission. He needs to absorb everything and then may get to a piece where he might feel uncomfortable. Ben Azai may feel uncomfortable. Ben Azai gets over it because the Gemara continues that Ben Azai ended up doing the same thing. But that's what it means in practice. Right? This is not just a saying. Rabbi Akiva did not just talk the talk. He was walking the walk. He meant it when he said, "Lo zazdi milashamish chachamim." I did not move. I did not stop from that point on. So that Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, I got to learn. I got to absorb the Mesorah attitude that he had. We saw he was the only student that Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus really felt he had, who was at least trying to absorb what Rabbi Eliezer had to give over. That was stamped in it. There's so many other pieces of that, but the Mishnah increases over here where Rabbi Akiva, you know, again, the details, this is the beginning of it. So imagine the scene. I'm Rabbi Akiva. Sha'alti is Rabbi Gamliel, that's Rabbi Yeshua, be'itlis shel imma'um. Imma'um was a very fancy suburb. So Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua went there. Why do they go to the butcher shop in Emma'um? They went there because it was making a wedding. So they went to the fancy butcher shop to get a fancy piece of meat to serve to everybody. So Rabbi Akiva tags along. There at the moment, what does Rikiva say? So he asked them an obscure halachic question. Someone who has relations with his sister and a bunch of other people, how many punishments is he chayav? He does not particularly matter. The Mishnah continues to give three or four other examples where Rabbi Akiva did the same thing with his Rebbeim in different settings. He's always along with them. Okay, it's Ramil's wedding, and he's just trying to find the right piece of meat. He's the Nasi. I mean, it's a political event. There are a thousand, there are some, the who's who is all going to be there. Rabbi Akiva tags along, and he needs to ask some obscure question about the nature of Chiyuv Kares. By the way, the response they tell him is, we don't know, lo shamanu, but we do have a tradition for a similar question. We can draw an analogy. We can make a kal v'chomer, which gets us to piece number two. Remember, this is Rabbi Yeshua over here, that not everything in Torah Shabbat Pak can just be memorized, absorbed, and transmitted. There also has to be a place for creativity and for analogy. Right here is an example of when Rabbi Akiva is being given on-the-job training in that regard. He asks some wild question no one's ever heard of. And we all, Rabbi Yeshua, say we never heard of it. But we can always, if we have the Masorah intact and we have the creativity, so those two together, we can answer any question you want to throw at us. And you come with an exotic case, well, we'll find one that we do know about and we can draw the Kal V'chomer to. So that brings us to piece number two from Rabbi Akiva's absorbing the Masorah, the Rabbi Eliezer and Hyrcanus part of him. But at the same time, the creativity. It's clear from many, many Mishnahs, Rabbi Akiva's creativity was unparalleled. Maybe thinking already of the story of Moshe Rabbeinu and Rabbi Akiva and Hashem and the crowns that Rabbi Akiva is going to darshan. We'll talk about that in a second. But there's one Tosefta in Mikvos, and it's an obscure case. We don't need to know the details of it, but it captures this most dramatically. The Tanaim were having a debate about an obscure halacha in the world of Para Aduma. You don't get much more difficult than Para Aduma generally, and we're in like the details of Para Aduma. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva, who are colleagues, so they disagreed in a certain case if it should be Tamei or Tahor. And then the Tosefta describes how everyone in the Beis Medrash split down on different sides. Rabbi Tarfon joined Rabbi Yossi Aglili's side. Rabbi Shimon Nanas joined Rabbi Akiva's side. And then they went at it, and it was like a tournament. Rabbi Akiva took out Rabbi Shimon Nanas, Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon took out Rabbi Yossi Aglili. One is taking out the other. Last man left standing was Rabbi Akiva. After the whole analysis and the back and forth, and just nobody can handle Rabbi Akiva's analysis, the ideas that he brings. So Rabbi Tarfon, who began the Tosefta by disagreeing with Rabbi Akiva, so Rabbi Tarfon gets up and gives a brilliant drasha about a parak in Daniel, which talks about a couple of animals having an all-out fight, and he compares it to what's happening here in the Beis Medrash. And he compares Rabbi Akiva to this ram from the book of Daniel, who's just the goring ram that nobody can stop. The mightiest animals can't stop this ram. That's Rabbi Akiva. You get Rabbi Akiva going in a sugya. He has an idea. He begins to think on his own. It's like the goring ram. Just, get out of the way. When I was in high school, Marshall Faulk was still an excellent running back. And ESPN had a line about him. You can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him. So that was Rabbi Akiva. You couldn't stop Rabbi Akiva. You can only hope to maybe make him think for a couple minutes before it showed why your question was totally not good and why your idea was totally ridiculous and why exactly what he wanted to argue was the correct shot. Someone who had the Masorah piece, but his creativity was unparalleled. Now, the question is, how do those two interact, right? Because the great danger, of course, of someone who's particularly creative is that they could end up going off the range. Some of the most fun Sfarim are Sfarim, which, they get to results where it's a lot of fun to read because it's exceptional creativity, but that no one passes this way. Right. Like that happens. Think of you, that brilliant person in the room. Everyone's met that person, the super genius who, you know, even you hear them talking, right? And you're thinking like, I know what they're saying is not correct, but I can't say why it's not correct. I just know that it's not true. You know, I know that it doesn't make any sense, but I can't say it because when I hear them say it, it's so compelling. So how does Rabbi Akiva manage to prevent himself with his creativity from becoming that person? So this is the topic of a couple Gemaras, but one that really illustrates it, that really illustrates the point beautifully. The clearest is this Mishnah in Maseches Zvachim. Again, Rabbi Tarfon, who was a little bit older than Rabbi Akiva. Remember, we saw last week that time that Rabbi Tarfon, who was very wealthy, gave Rabbi Akiva a whole bunch of money to invest for him. And to Rabbi Tarfon's immense surprise, Rabbi Akiva's idea of investing the money was giving it all to Tzedaka. So Rabbi Tarfon was someone who was a little older than Rabbi Akiva, but ultimately ends up, you know, acknowledging reality that even though Rabbi Tarfon is one of the greatest of the Tanaim, Rabbi Akiva is the greatest of the great. So the Mishnah here is talking about the avoda that's done with the carbon in the base of Mikdash. There are four stages of the avoda of a carbon. First, you shaft it, and you catch the blood. That's Kabbalah. Then you walk the blood to the mizbeach. That's Halacha. And then you sprinkle it on the mizbeach. That's called Zrika. So the second stage is Kabbalah, catching the blood, and the fourth stage is Zrika, is throwing the blood on the mizbeach. So Rabbi Tarfon says the Mishnah. Ekbach is banayim lo shemat lehavchen hefresh min Kabbalah Zrika, meaning the farish. He says, I will bury my children, meaning I know for a fact, right? He swears, if this didn't happen, I'll bury my kids. I know when I was younger and I was in the Beis Medrash that I once heard that there is a distinction between Kabbalah and Zrika. There's a certain difference between the halachas associated with catching the blood and the halachas associated with throwing the blood on his back. I heard this back in the day, and I can't remember. Ainli lefarish. So, gets up Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, on his own, proposes a distinction. What the distinction is now, it doesn't matter. It's actually not so clear. But Rabbi Akiva proposes the distinction. So, what does Rabbi Tarfon say? Or Rabbi Akiva comes up with this on his own. This is like in Sefer Daniel, when Nebuchadnezzar says, I had a dream, and if you can't tell me what I dreamed and what the dream means, I'm going to kill you. So Rabbi Tarfon says, there's some difference between Kabbalah and Zrika. Rabbi Akiva was not in the Beis Medrash. He did not receive this tradition. He comes up with it on its own. He proposes a distinction between the two stages of the Avoda. In a certain scenario in which you're able to disqualify the carbon through Zrika and not through Kabbalah. Okay, so he makes the proposal. Amar lo Rabbi Tarfon, Avoda, by the Avoda, another oath. Right? He swears again, Rabbi Tarfon swears again. You get Rabbi Tarfon to swear twice in one Mishnah, something astonishing is going on. There's At Hitisa Yamin Usmol Anishamati Ve'en, right? If I move to the left or to the right, Anishamati Ve'en Lefarish, I was in the Beis Medrash. I heard the shear, and I couldn't remember it. Ata Doresh, you, Rabbi Akiva, analyze by yourself. Umaskim Lashmua, and your independent analysis corresponds to what I heard in the Beis Medrash. So Rabbi Akiva's independent analysis, he has trained himself, he has absorbed enough that he now thinks like one of the Baalei Masorah. And what he develops on his own, turns out, was exactly what Rabbi Tarfon had heard so many years ago. Chazal described after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, they lost many, many halachos. The Gemara says that Asniel ben Kenaz restored them with his own pilpul, with his own analysis. The idea that independent thinking can be can contribute and restore the Masorah. Rabbi Akiva does that right here. Those two strengths that he has are not at all in tension. One is helping supplement the other. Rabbi Tarfon concludes and he says, "Amarlo Akiva kol haparish mimcha keparish mechayev." Anyone who separates from Rabbi Akiva separates from his own life. Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal. It's a very nice point about this. He had a very nice comment that the halacha that was being discussed here was not at all relevant to halacha lamaisa. Right? They were not talking about Hilchos Shabbos. They were not. They're not talking about Hilchos Tefillah. They're talking about the world of Karbanos. And yet, Rabbi Tarfon saw the perspective that one who has lost touch with Rabbi Akiva has lost touch from life. This is the living fountain of the Masorah, and he is who Rabbi Tarfon, who's not a student, is older than Rabbi Akiva, feels that he needs to be connected to. Okay, and that is probably what is going on with the Gemara in Menachos, the story of Moshe Rabbeinu going up to Shemayim and seeing Hashem putting crowns on the letters. This again, you know, we say you could talk about Rabbi Akiva for a whole year. This Gemara you could talk about for a whole month, at least for sure. But in brief, this Gemara is always seen as a paradigmatic example of the importance of and legitimacy of rabbinic creativity, because Moshe sees Hashem putting tagim on the letters, crowns on the letters, and Hashem tells Moshe that, you know, one day there's going to be a guy named Akiva ben Yosef who is going to expound piles and piles of new halachos based on every little tiny crown in the Sefer Torah. It's not literal because nobody darshans crowns. It means that there are so many little extra letters and extra words and funny details, all these tiny hooks, as it were, that Hashem is placing into the text of the Torah Shebichtav, and all those hooks, Rabbi Akiva is going to come along and find them and analyze them and hang new halachos on them. The ultimate example of creativity. You know, what's amazing is the continuation of the Gemara. After Hashem tells Moshe, there's going to be somebody called Akiva ben Yosef, who's going to be the ultimate person of Torah creativity. So Moshe goes back to has a vision of Rabbi Akiva teaching in the Beis Medrash, and he doesn't understand what's going on. And one of the students says to Rabbi Akiva, "Where do you get this from?" And Rabbi Akiva says, "It was a halacha la Moshe misina." The Gemara then says that Moshe was happy. So it's a little confusing. Why is Moshe happy if this is halacha Moshe misina? He should know about it. So there are many explanations. Rashi, in many ways, says Rashi is a very, very simple explanation. Rashi says Moshe was happy because why didn't he know this halacha? Because it's a halacha al Moshe Sinai. Right now, Moshe is on our Sinai, he's getting the Torah. So he's happy because he just hasn't learned this one yet. He's got 40 days up there. And Rabbi Akiva, 2,000 years from now, is teaching a halacha which Moshe is about to receive. So the problem with that is the beginning of the Gemara is talking about Rabbi Akiva's creativity, his ability to darshan. So why is the continuation of the Gemara Rabbi Akiva just transmitting halacha al-Moshe mi-Sinai that he didn't invent, he didn't come up with on his own? He received it from his Rebbeim, who received it from their teachers, all the way going back to Moshe. And the answer is that according to Rashi, what this Gemara is doing is demonstrating Rabbi Akiva as the complete package, as a chain in the Masorah, that it requires both elements. It requires the creativity. It requires the ability to darshan piles and piles of halachos and every little detail in the text. And at the same time, it requires the absolute unswerving loyalty to the tradition. Someone who is trying to absorb as much as he could and getting himself to think, you know, just like his teachers did. So that, as had happened with Rabbi Tarfon, the independent ideas that he came up with indeed corresponded to the Masorah. So this Gemara, according to Rashi, is putting on full display, literally, when Moshe Rabbeinu is getting the Torah, so the vision he has of Torah Shebaal Peh, which is Rabbi Akiva, is someone who can create and someone who can receive and transmit. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus and Rabbi Yeshua. And he's balancing both. And there's so many examples of this. Okay. Going back to Perkei Avos, so one of Rabbi Akiva's of Mishnayos, Rabbi Akiva says, his opening Mishnah, Perkei Avos, he says, Schok v'kalasrosh margilim schok v'kalasrosh margilim le'arva. Then he says masores siag la'Torah. First statement is a little bit unclear, a little bit troubling because it sounds obvious, right? It was Rabbi Akiva, who seems the most brilliant of the brilliant, so we don't need him to come along and tell us that if someone who gets too lightheaded, they can get themselves into trouble. It's pretty obvious. Well, the Maharal in Prague, in his commentary on Berakhei Avos, explains this is another classic example of Rabbi Akiva seeing both sides and balancing. Why? Because writes the Maharal, the previous Mishnah in Berakhei Avos was the Mishnah of Rabbi Yishmael, who's Rabbi Akiva's colleague, argues with him often. And Rabbi Yishmael had said in the previous Mishnah the importance of greeting everybody b'sever panim yafos. The importance of greeting everyone with a smile, being friendly, being happy, being someone who ruach abrios noche menu, someone who's not just down and serious and intense, and you just get a feeling of coldness every time you see them. It's important to be a warm, friendly person who gives off a feeling of life and of joy. So right to the Maharal, classic Rabbi Akiva, he comes in one Mishnah later and says, everything Rabbi Shmuel said is absolutely true, but don't overdo it. Not the balancer. Yes, of course, one has to be friendly and loving and caring and warm and everything else. At the same time, don't let that warmth and joy go too far into the realm of schok and kalas rosh, just empty laughter and lightheadedness. Always trying to balance the values, because if you go too far in one direction, you're going to get yourself into trouble. So there has to be a balance that he's trying to restore. And then I'm going to talk about the whole Mishnah, but every single one of these is Rabbi Akiva trying to balance two pieces together. So one that's most relevant for us is Masoras Siag LaTorah. So what does that mean? Tradition is a support for Torah. It's like saying Torah is a support for Torah. What does it mean? Well, one way of understanding it is tradition can be a support for creativity. The Torah Shebaal Peh, meaning the Rabbi Yeshua side of Rabbi Akiva's Machshava, the Chiddush side, the Ein Beis Medrash Vel Chiddush, all the Drashos, how do you know that you're in the right place, that you're thinking along the right tracks? No one has said what he said before. So how does he know that he actually is saying something that is true, about which we could say, Moshe emes v'saras o'emes? Masores, siag la'Torah. If you invest in absorbing everything from your teachers, if you make sure that you're thinking along the same line as those who came before you, you're putting yourself in the tradition, the Masorah, that will be a siag for your Torah. That will be an insurance policy that the creative ideas that you bring, that you contribute, are not coming from you, but in fact are corresponding to the truth of Torah. That's one way. That line would be then, in three words, Rabbi Akiva's Torah perspective in a nutshell. Okay. And the last one, I've really answered here, just this last one. Yeah, this last one is a community piece. Again, there's so much, but one more classic example of Rabbi Yeshua is the thing. Rabbi Akiva balancing both sides. So we talked last week. Rabbi Akiva was, you know, even though he was in the Beis Medrash, obviously, and the story happens in the Beis Medrash, Rabbi Akiva was also, of course, deeply involved in communal life. So we talked last week about the whole debate, Rabbi Graben Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua, who was going to be the Nasi. And ultimately, Rabbi Gamliel was fired because too many times he was disrespectful to Rabbi Yeshua. Well, the Gemara makes clear that who was the person who actually led the revolt? It's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, his dedication to his teacher, Rabbi Akiva is the one who led the revolt before he dealt with Rome. Rabbi Akiva is the one who led the revolt to take Rabbi Gamliel out of the leadership position. Gemara tells a story. After Rabbi Gamliel was demoted, so he goes to Rabbi Yeshua. He asks Rabbi Yeshua for forgiveness. Rabbi Yeshua does not want to forgive him. Rabbi Yeshua says, look, and Rabbi Gamliel says, I know you're upset with me, but you got along very well with my father. Can you forgive me in my father's merit? And Rabbi Yeshua agrees. So Rabbi Yeshua sends a messenger to the Beis Medrash telling them, let Rabbi Gamliel back in. He's being promoted back to Nasi. Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva got up in the Beis Medrash, saw this guy coming, and he said, lock the doors. He said, don't let any of the followers of the servants of Rabbi Gamliel into the Beis Medrash. We're not changing paths. He is the ringleader. He's the one who took charge. He was the one who decided that things had gone too far, and he took action, and he took extreme action. Lock the door. So the message gets back to Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua says, okay, I guess I got to go to the Beis Medrash myself. So he gets up, and he schleps all the way over to the Beis Medrash, and he himself goes, tell him to open the doors, and that room will be all come back. Immediately, says Rabbi Akiva, who had been all in this unprecedented idea of leading a student revolt against the Nasi. The second that Rabbi Yeshua says, bring Rabbi Gamliel back. So Rabbi Akiva says, Rabbi Yeshua, we only did this for your kavod. None of it was personal. And if you are telling us to bring Rabbi Gamliel back, then not only are we okay with it, but I will go with you. The two of us, let's go to his house. And the two of us together, let's inform him that that he's being restored to being the Nasi. Could be all in one direction, but as soon as there's a good reason to change the approach, he's all in on the other direction. MS, sometimes peace, it's not a time for peace. Sometimes it's an Eis Melchama, as Shlomo says. Sometimes you have to take a stand, and it may not be a stand that's easy or a stand that's popular. That's one that Rabbi Akiva is able to do. But then when there's a change, Rabbi Yeshua says, I forgave. So Rabbi Akiva says, look, I may not have understood this, but if you want to forgive, that's good enough for me. Now it's time to transition to an Eis Shalom. Immediately, the two of them go back to bring Gamliel back to being the Nasi. So this is all just scratching the surface, but so many areas in learning, in communal policy, in interactions with Adam Lachavero, with Tzedakah, in Adam Lamakom, with faith and destruction, where Rabbi Akiva is able to look at the whole picture, see all the different values, not discount any, but somehow, and manage not just to compromise, but to really hold of both of them and then transmit that going forward. So I hope you're able to understand me. It's like my voice being what it is right now. Apologies for that. If anyone has any questions, I'd love to hear them. But otherwise, I just want to thank everyone for coming to this series and hope it was productive.